Hello, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to Life Autistic. This is episode number 648. I just got, now this is, I guess we could call this Insights into Email. I just got an email. This has to do with work, so, you know, it's going to be got computer stuff. I got an email from a lady who was telling me about the fact that her computer system, well, that her email used to be quicker. I made a change, and now it's a little slower. Now, this wasn't the problem that she had had originally. Now, she's talking about a shared email space between her and someone else that they both need access to. So I had set up a system so that they could both share it. Now, there's also another end. If you're a computer person, there is kind of the POP way of looking at email, and there's the INAP way of looking at email. POP was designed, it would go out to an email server, and you would download all of your email, and it would be on your computer, and normally, when it's configured typically, once you download that email, it would be erased off of the server to make sure the server didn't get too bogged down. You know, you'd have to pay for a lot of space if the email just stayed there. Well, that's something that now is kind of anticipated. You know, we don't typically do email the POP, the stock POP way. Now, you can tell POP not to erase stuff, email at the source, and it won't do it. Now, you know, POP isn't made to be very sophisticated. Therefore, you'll have all kinds of issues. POP was made for one person accessing their email, and that's it. It was never made for any kind of sharing whatsoever. When people got into Microsoft Exchange, that was when we started seeing people sharing emails and saying, okay, you can look in my email box, and I'll look in yours, and things like that. More complicated steps than just kind of the standard, this is your mailbox, and nobody else can see what's in your mailbox. And you can go and get your mail, and that's it. It was much more analogous to, it's why it's called POP, which is Post Office Protocol. You know, the post office would deliver to you your mail when you went to your mailbox to go get it. And once you took it out of the mailbox, it wasn't in the mailbox anymore, right? It was in your hand. It was in your house. That was kind of the motif for that. IMAP, which is a message access protocol, it had a whole lot more capability, now a lot more complexity too. It, by nature, makes things a little slower because your mail would stay at the post office. It's almost kind of like having something more along the lines of a post office box. Well, maybe even not that. You know, there really is no natural analogy to it. It's more like kind of a, you know, I keep trying to come up with an analogy, and I can't come up with one. You can share that post office box. The mail stays in the post office box. Other people have keys to that box, and they can go look at it. They can go look at your mail. They can take it out of the mailbox and throw it away for you. You know, there's nothing to stop them from doing that, I suppose. And that's kind of what we set up in this circumstance. She went from kind of the normal post office protocol motif of dealing with email to more of an IMAP one. And she was upset because it runs slower. Because the kind of email client that we use, it doesn't tend to keep a huge cache on your computer of all of your email. It can, and it often does. But when you go and you get that first look at the email, it has to download that email for you. Because it usually only grabs the headers. It doesn't grab the actual text until you ask it to. Now, I can rearrange her email to make it so that it appears to be going faster because it caches more on her computer. That's a possibility. But, you know, it's just that way. And, you know, I am a guy that goes in for analogies and stuff like that. You know, and so I was talking to her about, like, oh, there's a deer. See, people think that we don't have deer here because we really don't seem to have the it's not forested, so it doesn't look right. This poor guy insists on staying on the road. I'm following. He's not a deer, actually. It's more of an antelope. There he goes. I think he's going to get off. There you go. Okay. He's all right now. He figured out that I wasn't trying to kill him. These poor guys, you know, these poor animals must be just nuts, because they must think that everybody's out to get them. And it's like, no, I'm not. I just want you to get out of my way. I'm headed somewhere. Of course, it doesn't matter to him. His heart rate's going crazy. He's scared to death. You can see it in his eyes. He was running down the road trying to get away from me. And it's like, but no, you're on the road. I'm going to keep following you until you get off the road. Finally, he got off the road. And of course, he stopped, but you could see his chest heaving. Not just from the running, but I think from the fear. You know, all these people are very, you know, these are very fearful things. Anyway, so getting back to the whole thing, you know, I was comparing the internet to a book to her. You know, and saying, you know, a book is great because it's so portable and you can take it places. You know, it doesn't require wires or electricity. It's easy to hold. Trying to read a book with a computer through the internet requires all kinds of weird accoutrements, and it doesn't feel, you know, it just doesn't feel right. It strains the eyes. Everything's kind of troublesome. Much like books aren't. Books we're very accustomed to. This is a very, very natural way for us to get information and to transfer information from one person to another, without just having a person having to get up and constantly tell their story over and over and over and over again. You know, you can put it in a book and then people can just read it at their leisure. And you get to go on with your happy life, work on something else. And, you know, but if you just have a book and you're just carrying a book with you, that's all you've got. You've only got the things contained in that book. With the internet, you have access to a whole cornucopia of things. And there's a certain trade-off there. And it's that whole world of trade-offs that I guess I'm wanting to talk about. You know, life is a big trade-off. You know, wouldn't it be wonderful, like when I was talking about being child-centered, wouldn't it be wonderful if we never had to grow up? Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could just be somewhere where you just go and you tell somebody what you want to eat and all of a sudden it just kind of appears? And you know, people get into the mood of being the kind of people that say, it's not coming fast enough, no, no, no. It's very easy for us because we come in an economy and in a world where, you know, there's competition, and one of the big things about competition is you'll tend to go after things that are more convenient. You know, I go and shop at Walmart because it's more convenient than me having to get on the internet with my credit card, try to find something at a good price, order it, and then have it shipped to me, and after you take into account how much you're paying and how much shipping it is, you know, the place they got at Walmart may end up being cheaper. So often it's not, though. But, you know, Walmart doesn't have quite the selection. It's kind of like having a book. You can have a book, and it can be a really good book, but it can only do so much. Where something that's more expansive, you can go there, and you can have a lot more choice, a lot more selectivity. It might not be as convenient as going just to one store and picking up what you want. You know, I tend to go to Walmart because I don't care. I don't care about the brand. I don't, you know, if I'm not worried about the features of something, if I'm not after something specific to accomplish a specific thing in my life, the Walmart version of it's probably just fine. I'll go shopping around and puttering around on the internet looking for something specific, when I finally say to myself, hey, you know, I want something very specific. I want it to be a certain quality or have certain features. Of course, that's going to take time, even on the internet, although the internet's far faster than driving around from store to store and finding out that nobody has what you want. There are certain trade-offs. You know, you have to be more literate about computers, just a little bit more, not a whole lot, to use the internet well to accomplish what you want to accomplish. That's why I don't go grocery shopping on the web. That's also why I think web grocery shopping, it was tried in the 90s, and a couple of companies did a pretty good job and went belly up, ultimately, because it just didn't work. You know, people, food is something of a commodity for people. And they wanted the lowest price they can get. You know, the fact that it gets delivered to your house was nice, but it didn't seem to obfuscate the fact that it was costing too much. People would look at the bottom line and go, whoa, this thing costs a ton. And it's like, oh, this isn't worth it. You know, there was the cost of gas to take it to every individual's house instead of having the people come to some central location to get these things. People seem to like that motif. So the trade-off that happened there went toward the way of just staying with the traditional kind of supermarket. It's not very traditional. We've only had them for a few years. But people seem to prefer that more than something else. You know? It's just like when the corner grocery got kind of wiped out by the large box grocery stores. You know? They went away. It was funny, you know, when Walmart comes to your town with a super Walmart and they have a grocery in there and their prices are typically on order, usually a little cheaper overall than your neighborhood grocery store, what we used to call a supermarket. Oh. I need to take this call. Hang on, let me pause here. Hi, this is Jay. I'm back again. I just got off the conference call. Found out my father and his wife were going on a mission for the LDS Church to Uruguay. Uruguay, however you say it. Little place between Argentina and Brazil. Interesting, just because it was the place we just had a young man come back from Uruguay, same exact mission. So I find that kind of interesting. Anyway, that's great. He's gonna go. They're going to South America. He always talked about how just incredibly poor people were there, so he's gonna get a taste of poverty, I guess, maybe, I don't know. Anyway, interesting. That's great. I'm happy for them both, and I hope they have a great time. And it's a mind. Well, it's certainly going to be an expanding experience. One can be assured of that. So that's the way it's going to be. So anyway, it's great. It's marvelous. Great to hear it. And wish them well. So now I got to remember what on earth I was talking about on the on everything else. Golly gee whiz, let me think. Oh, I can't remember. There it is. I imagine I'll be getting a call from my wife here shortly about her reaction to it. But that's great. What was it about? It was about... It's gone out of my head. It's kind of floating around the ether right outside of my touch. I was talking about the comparisons between books and things like trade-offs. Thank you. Ah, it came. Trade-offs. The trade-offs that we have to make. And it's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. Well, I'm sorry, I'm still probably thinking about the mission when I say it's a wonderful thing. Trade-offs often aren't wonderful things. But it's life, you know. Life comes with tons of trade-offs. And you deal with them. However they come to you. And, you know, I mean, every time I go do a job, you know, I tend to take everything just in case, because I know something strange will come up that I hadn't anticipated. Things I haven't anticipated. You know, one always has to think, what kind of equipment do I need to take with me for a certain job? I tend to take everything, but not always. You know, every day we kind of say, well, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? What kind of things are we going to have with us when we go? Of course, I'm a Zenith. Zeniths tend to have tools with them all the time for certain things that we do. And it's always a question of which tool to take. I'm a guy that likes really small, portable things, kind of multifunction utilities. Computers are excellent that way because they're really multifunction. Now, there's certain computers I use for certain things. The one I use for these podcasts is a little tiny OQO One Plus, and it's really good for a lot of things. Its biggest problem is just how slow it is. Now, one of my all-purpose kind of thingies is my cell phone. And because it fulfills a lot of needs, too. Now, there's a lot of things I can't do with it. The combination of the little OQO thing and the cell phone is a powerful combination. Because then I can have the internet almost anywhere. Like, I have the internet right now and I'm driving in the car out kind of in the boonies. Middle of nowhere. So that's really cool. That's really great. Guy. Anyway, so, you know, that's the way trade-offs are. Sometimes, you know, it's like, I get a little weary of people who always want constant, you know, better, 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 never giving a trade-off, always getting more stuff, same price, no trade-off. You know, that happens in the ebook industry. You know, people are all wanting an ebook to feel and basically behave just exactly like a book. And of course, you can try to get down to that point, but it never will. It never will. Now, there's going to be that there's good parts to the trade-off and there's bad parts. That's always true too. I mean, the fact that a little ebook thing that might be the size of a hardback book can contain hundreds of books, or thousands, or millions even, can have all these things. You know, it's never going to give you the same visceralness as a book does. I mean, they've really tried. There's places that have tried to come out with stuff that feels and bends and acts kind of like paper, but is really electronic, and so that you can have whatever book you want on it. And although that sounds kind of crazy and mystical and wonderful, I don't know if we're ever going to get there. And I don't know if it really ends up mattering. We may never get there. But what difference does it make, you know? Anyway, so there's Jay talking a little bit about trade-offs. I'm about to my destination, so I need to stop and get some gas and take care of other things. I'm excited about my dad and his wife Karen, and they're going out to go on a mission in Uruguay. That's going to be exciting. My dad has, I don't think, ever been really out of the country when he wasn't either on a cruise or some kind of really sincere tourist, not really living there. So I think this will be a great experience for both of them, because I don't think they ever have that. I don't think that's ever happened. I've worked and lived overseas, mostly on boats, but, you know, in exotic places, and I've had some experience with exotic places. Or not really exotic so much as just different places, different people, different cultures, different lives. And I think that's always good. It's always mind-opening, eye-opening stuff. Anyway, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to Life Autistic. This has been episode number 648. And have a great day.